a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, episode 187, the first show of the second year of The Counterposition. I really feel like I need something explosive there, just something huge. I mean, but I don't really have anything explosive or huge. I have a very counterposition show for you today. All right. You know, they say that there is no rest for the wicked. I don't think that's true, because I'm wicked and I got really good rest last night. So I've been having a little bit of insomnia, not as bad as it gets for me sometimes, but just having a hard time getting to sleep at a decent hour and staying asleep all night. And I did, so I went to bed super early last night, couldn't get to sleep. So I took a sleeping pill, like one of those like Tylenol PM type things, you know, excuse me, except without the Tylenol in it, you know, just one. And, I tell you, and it wasn't working at all. So I just lay in bed for like an hour reading Dostoevsky. I talked about yesterday, I mentioned Brothers Karamazov on the show, and I noticed it was sitting on my desk, and I had bought a new copy to reread it, because I hadn't read it in years. And so I laid in bed with the headlamp. I have a headlamp that has a red light on it, because you don't want to use blue light when you're trying to go to sleep, right? So I got my little headlamp on, laying in bed, reading Dostoevsky, which I'm really tempted to just pull and just as I read it and just read a quote or two and comment on it. It's just so good. I think that Dostoevsky has one of the deepest insights into the human heart and the relationships between human people, and just, you know, just that. Well, I guess there are other kinds of people. I started to say there's no other kinds of people, but there are people. Angels are persons, and there are three divine persons. So, yes, I'll stick behind that. Human people are people I know that I question whether they're human. But, yeah, so I finally went to sleep, and then I woke up, and I was, like, groggy, and I didn't have the day job till this afternoon. So I decided to do a little snoozy thing, but I use software to track my sleep. And so I had to reset it, and I must have jacked it up, because I overslept by like an hour. I was groggy. So I'm like, I think the Tylenol PM thing is for Friday and Saturday days that I don't have to get up early and do something. So, if you're someone listening and I was supposed to work on something for you on Thursday morning, I apologize. I hopefully got to it that afternoon. So yeah, there is rest for the wicked. And so I'm both rested and wicked. But you know, the thing is that I think you're slightly less wicked when you are rested. You know, I read an article the other day about this woman just took a challenge to kind of sleep 10 hours a day. Now, I know people are listening to this and going that is just impossible. And I'm admitting, if you have children, that is probably impossible in today's society. I've talked about biphasic sleep and whether or not there's any reason to try to sleep all night long the way things go. And, you know, in the way that we're kind of built and the way things have gone, you know. But anyway, this article, 10 hours sleep. And I notice if you're trying to lose weight, a lot of big time personal trainers, they're like, this many calories, this breakdown of macronutrients, do these workouts these many times a week, sleep 8 to 10 hours a night. We really are built, especially in the winter, we're built to go to bed a little after dusk and get up at dawn. Now, most people have a wake time in there. So, but yeah, it's interesting. So sleep is something that I've been very, very interested in. Well, I did a whole show on sleep. You can go back in the archive, find it. I have sleep apnea, and I've had insomnia a lot in my life. And so I've read a lot of books and stuff on sleep. The first one that kind of got me going is William H. DeMint. He has a book called The Promise of Sleep. And he talks about the concept of sleep debt. And so, I was just having a conversation with Adrian Prochaska the other day. Shout out to Adrian. I don't think I've ever given Adrian a shout out on the show. And we're both talking about how both of us, we have zero guilt whatsoever about sleep marathons. Sleep is one of the most productive, one of the most important, one of the biggest bang for your buck kind of things that you can possibly do for yourself. And so if you get a chance, if the kids are out of town or something, do not even hesitate. Do not feel bad whatsoever. Knock out, I mean, black out the windows, do whatever you need to do. Sleep hard as long as you possibly can. It is literally one of the best things that you can do for yourself. Remember, we are hylomorphic beings. That means we are a body soul composite. And that's why there's a place where St. Thomas Aquinas, just for sidebar, this is not one of my fake Thomas quotes. I over the weekend, for the 4th of July, I put on Facebook that I put a quote that America is about freedom. Hot, loud, nasty, exploding freedom. St. Thomas Aquinas. But you got to be careful with the quote you see on the internet. I mean, yeah, but no, this is a real reference to Aquinas. Aquinas recommends bathing and sleep as a correction for melancholy. Like if you're depressed or something, you're not feeling well, you're down, sleep, or take a hot bath and then sleep. Tell you what, we're not Platonist, you know, we're not Manichaean angels trapped in flesh, ladies and gentlemen. No, we are very much a body in addition to being a soul and possibly a spirit. Depends on where you land on that whole thing. I want to do a show sometime exploring that whole body soul versus body soul spirit, that tripartite thing. See if I can't get myself into some dogmatic trouble at some point. I'll be very Aristotle about it, I promise. There is rest for the wicked. And I got some. I you guys have been on this journey with me, so I'm going to share a key moment has been scheduled. If you're just now listening to the show for the first few shows or something, I admitted a deep, dark secret to my listening audience, and it was hard for me to do. I mean, you know, you want to kind of have an image. You want to not put too much out there. You know, it's like you want to be able to let people know that you're human, but you know, there's kind of a pressure to be kind of all finished and done when you're in Catholic media. So I made a really deep confession recently on the show, and I just want to let you know that I've followed up with that. And the confession that I made is that I've never seen The Lion King. I know. I was born in 1970, so I graduated in 89. In the early 2000s, I mean, I was single. I'm single. I've been single the whole time. I've never been married. I have no kids. I'm also an only child. So, you know, once I'm like, you know, mid-teens in the mid-80s, like Reagan is president, I mean, I'm not watching kid shows, you know, for the most part. So I mean, I've seen, you know, snippets here and there. You're flipping through the channels back in the day or something. I know there's something about like Hakuna Matata, something they say or whatever. And I kind of understand because I heard a sermon using Father Brian Larkin use it as a sermon tool one time. So I kind of, and it got me really interested because I have a big thing about this whole fatherhood, sonship, identity, you know, read too much, John Eldridge at one point in my life. And, but I've just never seen The Lion King. So shout out to the entire Golish family. They're having us over, and Ross Golish, who's an incredible chef, and I are going to cook up a bunch of tacos. I'm dragging along the lovely and talented Perry West and his guitar. And in a couple weeks, we're going to watch The Lion King, make a bunch of sick tacos, and have a bonfire. So I am going to no longer be a Lion King virgin here in a couple of weeks, and I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, I think there's probably going to be like an entire Lion King show which is some pretty cutting edge commentary. I'm gonna do a show commenting on a movie that we watched on VHS. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? If old books on paper with leather bound are not out of date to talk about, then I'm sure there's something that's worth talking about that's only on VHS out there, you know? So, yeah, Lion King is on, ladies and gentlemen. And, yeah, so, and it also seems like, I haven't really seen all the commentary on what happened, but, Comey, or however you pronounce his name, the head of the FBI, went over to, Capitol Hill and got grilled by Terry Gowdy and some people. And I'm glad someone's asking Comey, hey, so here's what the law says. You had a press conference and said that Hillary Clinton did all of these things. The law doesn't say anything about intent. And you suddenly decided to intent to this. So in case you're not following the news, the entire, from before she took the oath of office, all through her time as Secretary of State, the Democratic nominee for president had her own email server, like in her basement, with tons of classified information going through it. And it's basically, I mean, people have been put in jail for less, and they will continue to be put in jail for less. And they had a big press conference, and the FBI said, we've concluded our investigation. She did it, and we're recommending nobody prosecute. Well, Mr. Comey from the FBI is facing his decision to say that on Capitol Hill today. So, yeah, I'm trying not to be as political, but it just, the rule of law seems like it's more of a concept than it is a reality sometimes. All right, let's go to the break. We'll be back in a second. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you in there, son.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on
track. Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so I'm not promoting enough. You know, follow us on Facebook. If you're a tweeter, we are at Counterposition. And you can email me at thecounterposition@gmail.com. Haven't really been updating counterposition.com. That's a project that was started just to get an iTunes feed, and we got an iTunes feed in a different way, and I kind of abandoned it. And so and we've got a Podbean where we put all the shows up on. So I'm trying to figure out what to do with count, and we're going to, also speaking of behind the counter, I just got crazy busy in July. The last 2 weeks of June were those intensive classes at the day job, and I just haven't even had a chance to figure out how to use that back end section of the website at breadboxmedia.com and how to put stuff up for extra audio and all that stuff. I've got some stuff recorded, some video stuff, and some little fifth segment stuff, and I just got to figure out how to get all that up there in a way that's not going to be frustrating for you to look at. But if you want to be a friend of the show, go to Breadbox Media, click on friend of the show, pick my name from the list, and throw a little something at us. It would be awesome. All that money goes directly to me. We are a startup and we're still kind of launching, so not a whole lot of ducats coming back this way just yet, but I do this for love anyway. So, but that seems to be changing soon. Looks like Breadbox Media is starting to catch fire and people are starting to find out about it. And some people are getting really interested in it. And, I think this is going to be these are just growing pains. So, but we created this whole thing for you to get some extra media, some extra insider stuff, and for us to get a little something to help out. So go to friend of the show. And if you want to just, I don't think if you're someone who listens to all of these shows, and you know, on your commute, and I mean what I say gives something to your life. And, you know, if you're the kind of person that commutes and listens to podcasts, you could probably throw $10 a month or something. I mean, that would really help out. We're not a nonprofit, so we don't do fundraising drives or anything. I'm not going to interrupt, you know, Fresh Air and ask you to, and guilt trip you to give to the cause. You know, it's like, this is an NPR, you know, but you know, the friend of the show, worth doing. We appreciate it. I appreciate it. So where do we want to go with today's show? There's a good question. I read an article. Let me see if I could find this here article. Probably should have done this before I mentioned it. I read an article over on Pathos, I think it was, about they're talking about the simulation of reality and kind of like Instagram and Facebook and capturing experience. And this is The Divine Wedgie is Dr. Matthew Tan. And I don't know anything about this. I don't know about this guy. Maybe his other stuff is crazy or whatever. I didn't even really read this very closely. It just kind of caught my attention. But he talked about Jean Baudrillard, if I wanted to be all American about it, Jean Baudrillard, in his book Simulacra and Simulation and the concept of hyperreality. So that is the a book and a concept that actually was very influential on the movie The Matrix and the concept of the Matrix. It's French philosophy, and you know, I've never read Simulacra and Simulation. I don't know anything about Baudrillard, and I'm not recommending it as like, oh, hey, this guy's all onto something. He might be onto something. I don't know. But this kind of got me thinking about experience and the capture of experience, or experience versus the capture of experience, and kind of how that plays out. And it also, I mean, to kind of continue our previous topic, speaking of the Matrix, I mean, it seems like that we live in a world where, I mean, on paper, everyone is subject to the rule of law, right? I mean, unless you're a really hardcore, high-level politician with a lot of money, like Hillary. It's like, I mean, now that being said, I mean, this goes across a lot of politicians and stuff. So, I mean, we're kind of, what shocked me about the Hillary thing and how this kind of like was kind of a glitch in the Matrix, you know, is that we all know, I mean, there's nothing new that people with money and power and connection can make things go away. I mean, people do things behind closed doors. It gets threatened to come out from behind closed doors. People get paid off or killed or whatever. And then we don't find out about it. And people with money and power get away with crap. I mean, I'm not a child. I'm not shocked by that. What shocked me about this one is that the FBI determined that Hillary had in fact done everything that the law describes. And they had a press conference, and then they just did this Jedi mind trick about intent and just said, we're not going to prosecute. And it's like, wait a minute. I mean, it's kind of flagrant, you know? I mean, I'll get back to the Matrix thing, 'cause I forgot about something I wanted to talk about with the Hillary thing. So it's pretty funny. Plato describes the actions of the tyrant and what the tyrant is like. And I remember whenever we went into Iraq and we started unveiling kind of all the palaces and the situations and people that we would capture would give us insight into kind of the daily life and how Saddam Hussein carried himself. And a lot of us were just like, oh my gosh. I mean, it sounds exactly like the tyrant as described by Plato. And one of the things that Saddam Hussein did was he had a chair brought with him wherever he went. He sat in the same chair all the time because he was so convinced that someone was going to try to rig a bomb under a chair someplace and have him sit in it and take him out. So he was so paranoid that he brought a chair with him. So picture like when you go to the fireworks display and you like got your chair with you, that's like if someone's carrying your chair and they put it out for you. Yeah, that was every day, every time Saddam Hussein sat down, if he was out of his palace or whatever. So I think that I think there's a lot in common between Saddam's chair and Hillary's email server. I think that she just seems to be, she's paranoid. I mean, and she was burning daily schedules, putting her daily schedules in the burn bag and deleting stuff. And she just didn't want anyone to see any of her emails. She didn't want it going through the government circles. And they can't tell, supposedly, what's been deleted, what hasn't been deleted. There's work emails missing, but it could have been a server change and something went wrong or whatever. It's like, she's just really highly paranoid. And you see her paranoia in this whole thing, because the way she's responded to this and the way the people around her have responded to this is that people trying to apply the clear definition of the law in the spirit of the rule of law to her, regardless of who she is, are deemed as political. The application of the law that would apply to anyone else as applied to a Clinton is considered political. And there's no doubt that people abuse the law and use the law as a weapon at times and try to attack someone for something that they didn't really, properly speaking, do because they have a political agenda. But they don't usually have a press conference and come out and admit that you did everything in the law to break it and then just say that they're not going to prosecute. It was just so flagrant. In their mind, it's not flagrant. In their mind, there is a different reality going on, which is what wraps us back to this concept of the matrix and simulation and kind of like, what is that line in the Matrix when Neo is talking to Morpheus and Morpheus says, the Matrix is the reality that's been pulled over your eyes to make you blind to the fact that you've been reduced to nothing but this. And he holds up a battery. And I think that there's something like that going on in a sense that we think that we know the world we're playing in and we know the rules and we know how it works in some way. I mean, unless you're trying to do your taxes, then no one knows the rules. They're unknowable. These little things happen like this. It's like a glitch in the Matrix. Like, what? Was that the same cat? What do you mean? How similar? You know, it's like, oh, there's a glitch in the Matrix. Okay. But normally you kind of try to hide that stuff. And then I'm just amazed by what in the world do they think they're doing? Why do they think that's okay? Why do they think that they can just be above that? And it almost is, it's funny. It's like, if you're important enough, if you're a bank too big to fail, you're a politician too big to be prosecuted, in some sense, the only way to protect yourself is to get more political, because then anything that happens to you can be cast as political. Anyway, sorry about the switcheroo on the topic. I forgot that I wanted to compare her to Hillary to Saddam's chair. Anyway, we're going to get back to the simulation and Instagram, all that, after the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
And it's dark. Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we start talking about Jean Bouillard and Simulacra and Simulation. And like I said, I haven't read Bouillard. I just know the concept of the Simulacra and Simulation was kind of behind The Matrix. And this article on the Divine Wedge, you pulled put these two together and talked about Instagram and stuff. And like I said, I just scanned the article, but it just those putting those two together just made me think. But I didn't want to come on here and be like, oh, you know, I was thinking about Jean Bouillard. You know, I wasn't. I skimmed an article on Pathos. But it's interesting, you know, Plato said, Socrates says in Plato, he says that the unexamined life is not worth living. But something that I found is the overexamined life is unlivable. And you can't, you know, if you're asking yourself whether or not you're happy, you're probably not happy. If you are happy, it probably won't occur to you to ask whether or not you're happy. It's just, it's in, you know, and this is Aristotle 101. It's like this flourishing, this activity. It's in doing, right? It's a doing. When you're really flourishing, you're doing something that is so much an extension of your being. You're enacting what you are. I mean, there's your, you know, I think that would probably be kind of synonymous with the final cause in most things. To act according to your nature, right? And so if you take that down to the less, not to the nature per se, not substance or something, you know, but like kind of like who you are, your real name, your vocation, your calling, the way that you mirror the idea of yourself in the mind of God. When you're acting that way and doing that, you are happy, but it's not the kind of thing that you're examining. You're too busy just doing it and being it, right? Well, I think there's something like that in modern life, you know, just in daily life, you know. If you're, one of the things that I did for the behind the show was I was kind of in my 4th of July weekends in, and I went to Safeway, and they had untrimmed tri-tip on sale. And I was super stoked because all the tri-tip you end up getting out here in Colorado has all the fat cap trimmed off of it. Go to Costco, no fat cap. Go to Trader Joe's even. Shame on you, Trader Joe's. You're your California company. Should not trim the fat off the back of the tri-tip. It's there to make a self-basting piece of meat. And so they had untrimmed tri-tip, which is how I like to cook it. So I was all excited and I got that. And I've talked about that on the show. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a video. And so I tried to film a video, and I don't even know if I'm going to use it because the video is pretty crappy because it's kind of jerking around and I forgot I have my phone in my hand and I turned to do this. And it's like, you can't be doing some, it's hard to do something and record it at the same time, you know? And so there was a really interesting study I saw, or like an article I saw, that there was a restaurant, I think it's in New York City, that had just started getting worse and worse and worse Yelp reviews. And the people on Yelp were just constantly griping about how long it took to have a meal there, right? That it did, the service was so slow and so poor. And the people that owned the restaurant knew that they hadn't changed anything, that they were hiring top-notch servers, and that everybody's game was on, and they were working really hard to try to get everything out. And once the once the stuff came to the kitchen, they were getting stuff out on time. And so what they ended up doing, I think this is a fascinating study. I think we could do this with a lot of things. I wish I could do this with myself. They pulled the security tapes, like the digital feed of the entire restaurant. And they went back and they found the old security, found the old security footage from, there was an old VCR, like an old tape machine. And the last day that they used it, the tape was still in the machine. So they got that and they examined an entire shift from like 10, 15 years earlier when they were still using physical tapes. And what they found is the running of the restaurant hadn't changed at all. It was people's behavior had changed. So used to be, you would come in, you would all be seated, you would get your menus, they would chit-chat, look at the menus, talk about stuff. The person would come, tell you about the specials. Busser would bring some water to you, whatever. Wine steward would talk to you or whatever. Then, you know, inside of like 5-10 minutes, inside of 5-6 minutes, I think it was, the server was back at your table. People were given their appetizer orders. Nowadays, people come in, the menus go on the table, the phones all come out. Everyone's looking at their phones. And then they start taking pictures of each other and taking pictures of each other with the together and all this stuff. And it was like 15, 20 minutes before they get anyone to actually give them an order. And then they come out, they literally had people getting a plate of food, taking bunches of pictures of the food, taking pictures of each other with the food, sharing and commenting on each other's pictures of the food before anyone had eaten anything, and then sending the food back because it was cold. And no, here's the kicker though. And there was just more, one thing after another. They detailed it down. Like, here's what the average meal was like and how long it took and how the service went and how, you know, and they would try to bring the entrees and they wouldn't be finished with their appetizers, and an appetizer would get sent back because they were all too busy on their phones and taking pictures of everything. Right. So then they detailed it down the line on the old feed and the new feed. Now, here's the thing is that evidenced by how many people had griped on Yelp who had been long-term customers there. They didn't know that it was them. They thought this restaurant had gotten slow because they saw their activity. They saw their way of being in a space and the way of eating as perfectly normal, because that's how they do it when they go out. And they didn't know, like the proverbial frog put into the water and then the water turned on. They hadn't noticed how their behavior had changed. They hadn't noticed that they had become these people that take forever to order and all this stuff because they had just gotten used to this reality. You know, and it's funny, whenever I when I got off Facebook for a while, I took Facebook off my phone and I tried to just limit it to just like one time a day looking at it. I realize like how much time I burn flipping through Facebook, and I'll go to the front porch and have a glass of wine or a cup of coffee, try to read a book, and I'll try to leave my phone inside, and I will just be like, I'll be like, you know, Gollum, just like jonesing for the precious. I mean, if I leave my phone someplace, I will turn around and go back. I mean, I can't live without it. And I'm sitting on the porch trying to pray, trying to read a book, have a glass of wine. And I find my hand, not me, my hand keeps reaching for my phone to check it. And I think the part of this is this, what they call FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. You know, that's part of the issue. And I think that there's something like that with Facebook and with Instagram and with in tweet. There's an expectation in a certain part of the modern world that if you're not, that you're capturing and broadcasting everything you're doing. So if I don't see cool pictures of a fabulous meal from you, you've just been eating Hamburger Helper at home because you're broke and depressed or something. There's like almost like this what used to only be for people who were very, very public, you know, like, you know, stars or something. We're all kind of famous now, but when everybody's famous, nobody's famous. So then that's why, and you can be, and nowadays, think about it. You can become famous for being famous. Look at Kim Kardashian. I mean, she's, I mean, I don't know if everybody remembers, she's initially got famous because she was in a sex tape with a rapper, if I remember right. It was like, it's not like she's some big actress or she's got some talent or something. She was famous because she was infamous. And then once you're famous, you can become famous for being famous because people are watching you because you're famous. And they're like, hey, look at her being famous. Wow. And now you have an entire family of people that are famous for being famous. And yeah, they're good looking. Okay, great. They're good looking. Okay. So Kim Kardashian has a nice body. Great. There's a lot of people that are good looking that aren't famous. There's all kind of, but you know, it's, there's no reason for these people to have a show. There's no, and then it's almost like, I tend to think that that's behind the whole Caitlyn Jenner thing, is that, you know, he's a man and he can't figure out, you know, he's not a particularly crazy good looking man and his days as an athlete are over, but he's surrounded by all these people that are like crazy famous for something. So he's like, well, what could I get famous for? Oh, I'll mutilate my body and reinforce these false ideas about what gender is and that it's not biological sex. So I'll do this thing and then I'll get famous for doing that. I mean, that seems to be the case, right? So that's, I just think it's something we might want to have a look at. What are the unseen things around us that are, you know, kind of guiding? What's the water that has been slowly building up in heat around us that we're not noticing? I guess that's the question I want to ask today. So, all right, let's go to the break. When we get back, we'll try to wrap this up. You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. Oh, I'm lovely.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. I totally checked my phone during the break. So while I was doing that segment, I could see Facebook messages on my phone firing up because I had introduced two people. And I wanted them to have a conversation about some projects we're involved in and maybe a possible collaboration. All right. So I'm seeing Facebook messages on my phone while I'm doing the show. I'm being distracted by Facebook messages while I'm griping about people being distracted by Facebook. Hey, speaking of Meta, Meta kind of like multiple layers of stuff kind of commenting on it, kind of referring back and forth. I'm now talking today. I'm talking about the Lion King and tacos that we're going to have with the Golish family. And so while I was setting that up with Antoinette Golish, shout out to Antoinette Golish. As I was setting that up with Antoinette, she was listening to my show. So I'm texting her and talking to her while she's listening to me talk. So there were two Andrews talking to her through two different mediums at the same time. God, the modern world is weird, isn't it? It's just absolutely strange. You know, I get on this rant every once in a while. Maybe that's what I'll, maybe the second year of The Counter Position, I'll just redo the first year of The Counter Position because no one was listening when I did my greatest hits. I should go back and look at all my greatest hits and then just redo those with, now that I'm a little better at it and I have better mics, you know, because those were good shows, but no one's going to go that deep into the, no one's going to go back and listen to episode 2 when I told a story about everything from God and nothing else to how we should react to the SCOTUS decision. No one's gonna go listen to that. I should redo those. But no, it's funny. It's like it's just interesting that we've evolved into this weird environment where we just don't even notice all this stuff, what's going on. So Oh, goodness. I don't know. Oh, I remember what I was talking about. Oh, sorry. You thought I lost it, but I didn't. The train came back around. I know I've talked about this before, but I just remind myself sometimes, Andy, you have you lived until, I mean, what year was it? I think I was like 30. I might have been 31. I was at Thomas Aquinas College for the second time around. It was the summer that I hurt my back and slept. I mean, shout out to Roy and Carissa McKnight. I even had to move out of the dorm for the summer, and I was going to move into this place, and I blew my back out moving my stuff, and I had a back surgery back in 96. This was a few years later, and they let me sleep on the floor of their house, like on a big hard mat, like a pallet we built, like in their nursery with their baby. Like I had no place to go. I lost the apartment I was moving in, fell through the spot they had open. I had to get out of the dorm and I blew my back out, and Roy and Carissa let me sleep on their floor. So I'm going to broadcast your good deeds from 2001. But yeah, it was that summer. It was 2001. That's when I got my first cell phone. And it was like a Sprint prepaid kind of cell phone or something. It had almost no minutes on it. It was for emergencies, right? And just quick calls. And so, I became who I am. I read books. I studied art. I got almost a full degree in philosophy from a public university. I, you know, bought cars and took out student loans. And I mean, I took out student loans and did all that without email at one point. I mean, it's like I can remember getting my first email address. It's like, I used to not have email. Mail was something that was made out of paper and it came to your house. The phone was something on the wall or on your desk in your house. Everyone had the same ringtone and it was called the phone. And you called places, not people. I didn't check anything. You know, it's funny. I mock my dad for not having voicemail and not having an email address and all that. And I mean, okay, look, if he was, you know, living this rich life, I probably wouldn't mock him as bad. But I mean, it's like, there's an aspect to which I'll give the Amish and my old man a high five when, I mean, at least they're not distracted by that stuff. I mean, he's watching media and stuff and watching Fox News and all this stuff. But you know, there was a time when I lived without cable in my house, didn't have a cell phone. There was no computer in my house. I didn't even have an email address. And when I look back on that time, man, I got a lot more writing done. I read a lot more books. I spent a lot more time with people. I played music more. I mean, I just, you know, I don't know. This is just me thinking out loud. And my spiritual life was way better back then. I prayed way more. I was more mindful. I was, you know, so I don't know. I'm just today. I didn't plan on turning into old man Luddite today, but it is interesting to think about whether or not we really have to do all this stuff. Now, the problem is that like me, for instance, right? I have an apostolate, which is kind of also a consulting firm, and they're about to become two things. And I have a daily online radio show. All this stuff has to be promoted. I have to interact with people and stuff. I want to. I enjoy it. I really love it. But it's funny. It's like, maybe we could, I mean, how much time do I spend on Facebook? As you can see, half the time I don't put the show up. The Facebook page for this show, it can be a little dormant. So I'm on Facebook all the time. I'm just not doing anything worthwhile. I wonder if there's a way to cancel, to put on hold my personal Facebook page and only be Calyx and the counter position. There's a question. Maybe I should look into that. I get more done. You'd hear more from me and I'd be less distracted. But you know, I like seeing my friends' kids doing cute things with the hose in the yard. I mean, there's the other side of that. This is a long-term argument that Mark and I have been having back and forth on the over the counter podcast over the years. And both of us we kind of agree. I mean, we both kind of defend that digital community can be real community. I think the problem is that digital community can be real community, but it's a form of community that takes place in a neighborhood, so to speak, of a bunch of really sketchy weirdness and all kinds of flashing distractions and all this stuff. And, you know, you could have a conversation with a friend on your porch, or you could have a conversation with a friend by commenting back and forth on something on Facebook. The problem is when you're on your porch, no one is coming up and holding up a sign that says, you know, find women over 40, you know, cool new wallet that will change your life. You know, you're not getting inundated. You know, hey, look at this puppy got his head stuck in the dish. I mean, look at this cute cat. You know, so and so's the devil. You know, you're not. No one comes up and shows you these placards while you're trying to have a conversation with someone on a porch, right? I mean, people might walk by. You know, heaven forbid there might be the radio might be on, you might hear an ad or something, but you don't, it's not the same. Right. And it's, and sometimes I guess it's like, I want to ask whether or not it's just killing us, whether or not it's just completely, if we're all slowly being boiled alive in this digital water, we have too many distractions. You know, and I think that the last thing I want to look at with this simulacre and simulation thing is that, I think that we have become addicted to reality simulated and reflected. And how is that different than what I mean before? I think that the reason we feel the need to take pictures of our food and we want to look at other people's meals and feel like we've had some experience of that is the same thing that happens with porn. That's not intimacy. It's not even intimacy between the people that are doing whatever they're doing in the porn movie or something. It's not intimacy. But it's this drive for acceptance and affirmation and intimacy when all these guys, and well, when women too, all these people that are going and looking at the simulation of an event. So it's a simulation of event that's not actually the event being simulated. And you're not involved. You know, I was watching... I showed Perry West, speaking of old movies on VHS, I showed Perry West Weird Science. It's like it's such an 80s movie, you know, Anthony Michael Hall, Gina Davis, you know, and these two kids build a woman with a science experiment. They're like little science geeks and they build a woman, right? And so they're... He had just gotten this computer and he can make simulations and stuff on this screen. And here's two teenage boys, right? And they literally say, he says, hey, we could make a woman on there. And well, how real could you make it? I mean, well, if I worked on it for a while, I could make it pretty, it could seem pretty real, you know, right? He's like, and he said, we should do that. And the little character goes, yeah, but I mean, it would just be a picture on a screen. It wouldn't be the real thing. And it dawned on me that it wouldn't occur to almost any common teenager to say that today. Now, maybe whether any common teenager in the mid-80s would have said that either is a good question. But I think that this living through the reflections of reality that isn't really what's being reflected is kind of the pornification of day-to-day life in this sense. Man, there's the ending on a really, really bummer note. So, all right, go eat something delicious and don't take a picture of it. But let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. See you next time. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.